Strumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words.
It's hour number four on this Friday. It's Bickley and Marotta, Luke Lipinski, and for the vacationing Dan Bickley. The Phoenix Suns, at least most of them, vacationing right now with the All-Star break. DeAndre Ayton playing for the world team tonight in the Rising Stars Challenge. Devin Booker defending his three-point title tomorrow in Charlotte. Everybody else doesn't have any official capacity in All-Star Weekend. It's a great time to reflect now that we have officially the worst team in the NBA at the break with the longest losing streak intact. Yes.
Finally.
Is that what we say?
Yes. Well, because Kellen Olsen joining us in studio. You knew that by the music, though. The man needs no introduction other than that. Kellen, how are you?
I'm doing well.
Knicks beat the Hawks last night.
They sure did.
Yes. I don't know how. They
beat 16, them. Too, yeah. I believe.
So now,
what a trouncing!
By percentage points, the Suns, the worst team at the break, at 11-48. Put some adjectives on the first half of the season
that you can say on the radio.
Yeah, yeah, of course, keeping our license intact.
Stupefying. I think that's the first one.
Yeah,
it's a good point one. Guard? Question mark.
I don't think that's an adjective, but okay.
It'll work for our purposes.
Point guardish.
We'll start the conversation here, Kellen. I've made this point to Bickley. I didn't expect the Suns to compete for a playoff spot this year. Did I expect improvement? Yes. Am I somewhat baffled by the fact that the record is as bad as it is at the break? Absolutely. I don't think there's, even with the youth and the new coach, I don't think there's any reason for this team to have 11 wins right now. Do you agree?
I completely agree. It's going to be what I've been saying the past couple of weeks is this year is now going to be framed as a transition year when this was supposed to be the year they were supposed to improve.
Mm-hmm.
Win totals were 25, 23, 21 in that range past 3 years. This is the year where they were supposed to threaten for 30. Las Vegas thought as much. They had the over-under at 28.5. So they are going to maybe underachieve that by 10 wins or more, depending on how the rest of the season goes. I think the most troubling thing is I predicted 27 wins for them, but with the caveat that I thought after the All-Star break, they were going to play near 500 ball and kind of do what the Hawks have been doing right now. The Kings have been doing it all season, but the Hawks in the past couple of weeks have started to figure things out a bit. I expected the Suns to do that around this point in the season.
Mm-hmm.
But they're on this 15-game losing streak. They've lost 21 of 23, and there is no hope in sight. If we were looking for any hope, by the way, in that Clippers game, we got zero. That is the most disengaged I've ever seen Devin Booker in his Phoenix Suns uniform ever.
Mm-hmm.
He
10 points in that game.
In the fourth quarter, you know this with how much you're at the games, how much you're watching them, and Luke knows this too. When he's in the fourth quarter and it's garbage time and they're down, he still tries to score.
Mm-hmm.
He's still there inside of the game. He was just passing the ball, dribbling around. He was like, I'll take my 10 points, whatever, just get us to the All-Star break. And I've never seen him act like that before. It's really stressing.
I've never seen a team, they're literally two losses away from being mathematically eliminated from the playoffs at the All-Star break. Like, that's
if you double
of.
Their win total, they would still be in last place in the Western Conference.
Well, that's even more depressing than my stat.
Yep.
What, based on what you just said about Booker, we're just trying to break Vince at this point. What, where does the internal motivation come from for this team now after the All-Star break? Because as you said, your prediction of 27 wins before the season was a strong stretch run after the All-Star break. Do you still see a strong stretch run, or even a relatively strong stretch run after the All-Star break, or is this getting worse?
Well, the best players on the team are the players that they are building around, hopefully, for the next decade. So the two things I look at after the All-Star break is Devin Booker staying healthy, because we know he's going to play at a high level. We don't even have to say if he plays at a high level. He will. But him staying healthy, and then DeAndre Ayton continuing to improve. I think that run he had in late December, there was that game in Brooklyn where he just looked fantastic. He did look pretty great in the first half of that Clippers game, but couldn't get going in the second half. I think seeing him continue to improve over the course of the season are the two things that we want to see, and by virtue will also have the team play better and win a couple more games than they are right now, to say the least. I think guys like Mikal Bridges starting to get more comfortable off the dribble and having more of an impact. Anthony Melton was getting a little bit better before he got hurt. Where can they look at this as a positive, I think, is Warren and Melton have been out. They've been dealing with these injuries all the time. It took them 20 games to figure out their rotation. There is a way to frame this to be a positive in terms of they can still turn this around. But with that being said, just the way that they've played over these last 15 games, yes, three buzzer beater losses, mm-hmm. but in those other 12 losses, they have gotten smacked and just not really stood a chance. And that's where the encouragement is really lacking for them right now.
Kellen Olsen in studio with us as we talk about the Phoenix Suns at the All-Star break at 11:48. And we'll get into the general manager, and we'll get into the coach, but focusing on the personnel. You talked about the disengagement level you saw from Devin Booker in that last game against the Clippers. I think, I can't say a majority of people, I think there's a good amount of people whose thinking on Devin Booker has altered this season. People that might have been squarely in the camp of, yeah, this guy is a future superstar, the guy to build the team around. I have not swayed from that. I know people have. Has your thought process changed at all on Devin Booker as you look at his future path?
No, because I think any reasonable human in his position would be reacting the same exact way. I think it's a perfectly reasonable way to go about things with the way it's going on. I think he has actually been impressive with the way he's been able to hold himself in and reel him back a bit. You can tell after these games, being in the locker room, that he is extremely frustrated, even after having 30 to 45 minutes to cool off after the game, that he's extremely, and we get those little sound bites here and there. I think we're comfortable with losing. These are unacceptable, the way we played. Those types of things have come out from him from time to time, but he's been able to reel it back, and he's been doing so while improving his game in other areas. And people are going to bring up certain stats here and certain stats there that say they've been better with him off the court lately, and that's been true. But I think he is still the building block A of this team, even ahead of DeAndre Ayton at this point, and I don't really see changing that. All the fans who are saying they should trade him, all the fans saying that he's overrated, I just think that they're falling into the lull we're in right now of the franchise's lowest point in quite a while.
If you get the first pick in the draft, I mean, I'm assuming Zion Williamson. I don't think the fan base would let you take somebody else. But if you have the second or the third, or I guess even the fourth pick, is there another player that stands out that would be the clear second option, or are you looking at maybe dealing that pick?
A lot of people want that answer to be Ja Morant, and their answer is Ja Morant. It's not for me. I think the way that he plays as a 19-year-old point guard is extremely volatile, and it's either going to click for him immediately in the league, or it is going to take him a couple of seasons to really figure it out. He really sees the floor well, but you see one possession where I watched a game. He tried to throw an alley-oop to himself off the backboard from the three-point line because there was 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and he just didn't know what to do, and his thought process is just kind of shut down. He has moments like that as a point guard, and then he has others where he splits the pick and roll, kicks it to the weak side corner like it's nothing. He's really up and down all over the place, and that sounds like exactly what this team does not need, as well as a ball-dominant point guard for Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton. I don't think you need that at all. They want someone more in the frame of De'Anthony Melton, defense first, who can pass. I'm not saying De'Anthony Melton should be the point guard of the future, but with that being said, Morant is the second most appealing guy. RJ Barrett out of Duke, another ball-dominant guy. Guys like Cam Reddish, Jarrett Culver, DeAndre Hunter, they have appealing aspects as role players, but they're going to take time to develop as well. I think the most obvious thing for the Suns to do is if they don't land the number one pick, Zion can completely change things for them. They should not hesitate to take him no matter what offers on the board. That's the way they really turn this whole thing around, is getting a guy like Zion Williamson. But if they get the second, third, fourth pick, they should look at trading it for one of those two positions, point guard or power forward.
Amen, Kellen.
Yeah.
But if they don't, and let's say they do have an affinity of at some level for Ja Morant because point guard is an issue, maybe changing the thinking a little bit, you know, and I know this is maybe counterintuitive to what's happening in the NBA, but taking time to let a player develop, maybe getting a veteran point guard to start and give Ja Morant spot minutes here and there until he gets comfortable. I mean, every rookie we've seen that the Suns have added at a high draft pick has played a significant role immediately. It hasn't really worked out that well. Would you be against that?
I think another way to frame that is if he comes in here, he's the third option on offense right away. And there are some teams that would draft him and look at him to have the... You guys remember Emmanuel Mudiay when he was drafted by the Denver Nuggets, and they basically handed him the keys to the entire offense and made him the number one option from day one? Didn't go well for him. The Suns would not do that with Ja Morant. They would bring him along slowly just in terms of Booker and Ayton being more important offensively. But I'm not against bringing in Ja Morant. You talk about excitement and just him and Devin Booker in a backcourt. There are certain flaws there, shooting, defense, and again, the decision-making I brought up with Morant. But with that being said, there is appeal there, and I think you said it. If they bring him in the right situation, there's reason to believe that he could succeed here. If you bring in someone like a Ricky Rubio or a Patrick Beverley in free agency, for example, you draft Morant and you allow that guy to be the guy for 1 or 2 years, Beverley or Rubio, and then you're bringing in Morant along the way. I think there is some... There's a good thought there, yeah.
Yeah, Kellen Olson joining us in studio as we talk about the Phoenix Suns. We know, and you get reminded of this all the time, you were squarely on Team Doncic last summer leading up to the draft. That being said, he's having a good year in Dallas. DeAndre Ayton's done really good things in Phoenix, but seems to be a whipping boy for Suns fans. What do you say to those people on a daily basis? Because I'm sure you get hit with it a lot.
It's strange because my thoughts... I'm very positive about DeAndre in this year, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think he's great. I've written two different pieces in the past 2 months suggesting that I think he's going to be a terrific offensive player, and he has the foundation to be a guy who could put up 30 to 40 points really any night. It's all there for him, and he's showing it. That's the thing, is we looked at him as a potential guy coming out and a little bit raw, and that's why I had Doncic ahead of him, is because I thought Aiden was just going to take a little bit of time. But we're seeing him add post moves already. You've noticed the signature fall-away jumper that he's already got. He didn't have that at U of A. We didn't see that. He had the spinning hook shot the other day in LA. He's developing. But with that being said, Luka Doncic is averaging right now what only Oscar Robertson has as a rookie, and that's it. Michael Jordan didn't do that. LeBron James didn't do that. I'm not saying he's the next guy, but we're talking about that level of production as a rookie. I see people comparing Doncic and Ayton's stats and saying, oh, look how close they are. And the stats for Doncic are 22 points, 5 rebounds, and 6 assists or whatever it is. And you have to realize he's doing that as a rookie, as a 19-year-old. Has them 5 games out of a playoff spot right now. They traded his entire starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
His entire starting lineup is gone. They have already built around him, and he's still going to have them in the playoff hunt towards the end of the season. I think he's just a transcendent player right now, and that's where I fall on the camp. Is I've never been negative Ayton, not even back in last June. Just pro Doncic and just the way he's been playing.
And he's younger than Ayton, which everybody seems to forget.
Yeah, but he played in Europe, don't you remember?
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a bad thing. Looking up and down this roster, you know, we're having this discussion this week, and we've had it for a while, but it's like you're looking like, okay, well, Devin Booker's good, and DeAndre Ayton's good. I don't want to trade T.J. Warren, and I like Kelly Oubre. I don't want to lose him, and Josh Jackson's got all this value. You roll down that Mikal Bridges defensively. This team has 11 wins. They're going to have to trade somebody, even though when you go player by player, nobody seems to want to trade any of them. If you're making a trade this offseason, who are you most willing to part ways with that has value?
I would need to know how highly Josh Jackson is still thought of in NBA circles. Okay. Because if he holds enough value, I would say Jackson, just because of how highly he's ranked. But if he's ranked a little bit lower and how some Suns fans feel about him, there are some Suns fans that are still very behind him as a player. Others have kind of given up on him and moved on. I look at T.J. Warren and what he's done. All of a sudden, that contract, I thought it was good value at the time. It looks even better now with the way he's grown as a three-point shooter, and I think he has always incrementally improved year after year. He just looks like a player that could really thrive in the right system around the right players. I think we saw that with P.J. Tucker a couple years ago. I remember he had a back-to-back game sequence where he guarded Carmelo, and then he guarded Anthony Davis the next night. I was like, mm-hmm. Man, I just can't wait to see him on a 50- or 60-win team. And we've seen it in Houston and Toronto when he got traded. It turns out he's pretty great for them, and it's awesome to see that. And I think T.J. can be the same guy for a certain team. And stylistically, you look at what they're going for defensively, switching a lot of stuff, the length and athleticism. I just don't think TJ really fits, especially with the way that he fails to pass the ball in Kokoskov's system, which is so reliant on that. You've seen so many, we've both all seen so many possessions where Ayton is open in the post, TJ Warren's a guy with the ball, and he just can't get it to him for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And that's unacceptable. But at the same time, having a floor spacer like Warren next to Ayton is pretty great. So there's conflict there in the value, but I think TJ is the answer, unless Josh Jackson is still thought of as a guy with top 5 pick potential, which I'm not sure is the case.
In terms of the front office, Kellen, I guess you could say now the tone was kind of set early on when 9 days before the season, Ryan McDonough was fired as the general manager. You get James Jones as kind of the figurehead now as an interim general manager. Here we are in February. There's been no determination made on whether or not James Jones will be the guy moving forward. I look at it one of two ways, but the result is the same. If they decide from now until the end of the season that James Jones is the guy, you can make an argument they wasted a year in a way. If they decide to move on from James Jones and bring in another general manager, you can make the argument they wasted a year. Is there any benefit to handling this situation the way they have, as you see it?
I don't think so. the weird thing about him, and Gambo has brought this up a couple times in the past couple of days, is if you look at the moves Jones has made, they've been pretty good.
Yeah.
Jamal Crawford was a move. Even for me, I was like, okay, yeah, sure, fine, okay. And it turns out he's been much more valuable than that to them. The Kelly Oubre
trade. Jamal Crawford?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, the phone.
Yeah, I knew it was coming.
Sorry, I should have warned you.
I said the name. I should not have said the name.
Certain names you can't say on this show.
Did the Kelly Oubre trade kind of fall into his lap? I think it did. But did it work out? Yeah, it did. It's been pretty great. And I think that's the confusing part about this. You guys talked about this a couple segments ago. I don't understand what the plan is. He's trying to tell us what the plan is, and I just don't get it. I don't understand what in the world they're doing. They say they're done rebuilding, but this sure looks like a rebuilding year, and they said they didn't like the progress they've been seeing. What do you call this year, then?
Yeah.
This is not progress. This is the opposite. So I don't really see any way it makes sense to bring him back, given the way this season has gone in the win total, and that's really all that matters.
Mm. You and I have talked about this before on the rundown, but now with 23 games left, what are you looking for? Not even in terms of wins and losses, but just, I mean, is there anything that can happen that gives them a definitive direction here in the next 2 months heading towards next year? Are there certain players that you're like, okay, I want to see more from this guy and it's realistic? Or are these games relatively meaningless? I mean, I've seen polls online where Suns fans are asked, you know, would you rather just they canceled the rest of the season? And it's like 60-40 yes from Suns fans.
Man, I'm not in that camp yet.
Okay,
I'll still
good.
Watch.
All right.
I don't want to watch games like the Clippers game if I have the choice to, please, where they appear to just be ready to go on vacation and hit up Charlotte. But I mentioned Booker and Ayton earlier. I think Josh Jackson, D'Anthony Melton are the two guys that stand out for me the most, because if you look at what they're doing in the future, I think Ayton, Booker, and Bridges are firmly there. The rest of the guys, though, and I'm not sure. And that I say I'm not sure on Oubre just because I'm not sure if they're going to pay him. Once they pay him, it's clear that he's part of the future, but we just have to wait and see if they do there. Josh Jackson has had all these stretches in his career, whether it's the end of last year or the start of this year or the past five or six games, really, where he's put it together, but he hasn't been able to do it over a 15-20 game stretch. And if he can really prove that his decision-making and awareness has improved as a ball handler and that he can contain himself a little bit more defensively, he can be a real piece for this team going forward. And I think D'Anthony Melton just developing as a ball handler is where he needed to grow the most coming out of the draft, and he has done that during the season. He's had some great games where he's finished with high assist totals, and that's going to continue this year. Can he be trusted enough to run a two-man game with DeAndre Ayton and be the second guy that can do that outside of Devin Booker? I think that's the two guys I'm watching the most. Yeah.
Talking Suns basketball with Kellen Olson of ArizonaSports.com here on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Igor Kokoschkov, rookie head coach. I think there's a large group of people that support the Suns that want to see a head coach, as frustrated as they are with what is happening on the court. It's clear we're not going to get that. I've made the argument that when you have this many young players, maybe he's the perfect persona to have because he's patient. He's even keeled. Now, has he supported his players in officiating problems? Maybe not that much. But I do have some criticisms of Igor Kokoschkov, too. I think sometimes his use of timeouts is strange. His rotations don't make sense a lot to me. How would you, and I know it's hard to look past the 11 wins,
yes,
but how would you grade Igor Kokoschkov as a rookie head coach?
I think he's been fine. It's hard for me to be overly critical of guys in the situation they're in right now in the Suns, and I really liked what he did at the start of the season, starting Isaiah Kanan and Ryan Anderson and having Trevor Ariza try to play 35-40 minutes a night, because he had no other choice, because he knew this type of stretch was going to come if you played too many young guys. Mm-hmm. He just knew they weren't ready yet to pursue 25-30 wins, and he had to make sure that Isaiah Kanan wasn't the guy, that Ryan Anderson wasn't the guy, and to a certain extent Trevor Ariza wasn't the guy. Turned out all three of those guys were not the guys.
Yeah.
So now he has to start three rookies. Now he has to play this rotation where the average age of these guys is under 22 years old. So with that in mind, I agree with a lot of what you said there. I think the rotations haven't made sense a lot. I think he's still figuring out head coach things. You can tell that the experience level in terms of in-game strategy needs to improve. man, that game they had Monday, I can't remember who they played off the top of my head, but that was a game where the Suns weren't having calls go their way, and they were getting beat by about 15 in the second quarter, and I was like, this is the time for a head coach to throw a chair or do whatever and just get up in a ref's face for 30 seconds and not only stand up for their players who don't think they're getting calls, but also motivate them and get them back in the game because they were falling out of it. And we didn't see that from him, and it's just clear that we're never going to get that from him. I hope I'm wrong on that, but I don't think I am, because there's been numerous opportunities. The Clippers game was another one where his team was clearly asleep and they needed someone to wake them up. Yeah. He's not going to be able to do it in the huddle. He's not going to be able to do it in the locker room before or after the game. In the middle of the game, it's been clear that he's not going to be able to do that. Can he do it by getting in the ref's face? Maybe. These players clearly think the refs don't like them, so it would certainly help.
That is
true. They're one of the teams that complains the most in the league to referees. So I think he's been okay. Does he deserve to get fired at the end of this year? Absolutely not. Does he deserve to be on the hot seat entering next season? Yes, without a doubt.
Okay, that's fair.
James Jones was on Newsmakers on Doug and Wolf, and he mentioned earlier this week, you know, there's a desire to go out and get some more established just NBA guys that have been in this league for a while and they've had some experience, whether it's overcoming losses as a team or just experienced winning or whatever. And yet you rattle off a few guys that they have brought in the past. They weren't guys James Jones brought in, but like the Tyson Chandler, Trevor Ariza, I mean, those guys just didn't work, and it didn't seem like they really wanted to be here. Ryan Anderson, it didn't play for 2 months before they ended up ultimately dealing him. What's the process to identifying a guy that isn't just in his late 20s that's been in the league, but actually wants to be here and can help this team get better?
Man, I don't know the answer to that question, to be honest, because the situation...
See, because if you had given me the right answer, you were going to be the new GM of the Suns. You didn't.
Oh, man. So close, man.
You're still in the running, though. Don't worry.
You've been on the inside this entire time.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That's why I asked these questions.
Oh, my goodness. I don't think there's a way to answer that. How do you know? Trevor Ariza and Ryan Anderson said all the right things before the season. We are ready to come in. We've talked about this numerous times, how we're going to come in and change this team, and we've come from the situation in Houston. We know what it takes. We're going to show these guys what it takes. That did not happen, and it seemed like they were the guys. Yes, Trevor Ariza got a one-year deal that paid him a whole lot of money, and that's probably why he came here in the first place, but it also seemed like he had the mentality and the background of winning. I don't know who the guys are. I think it's on the young guys. I think it's on everyone within the organization right now. I don't think it's on someone else to come in here. I mentioned Zion earlier, but that's just because he's such a next-level talent that he could change things. But
yeah.
It's on Booker, it's on Aiden, it's all these guys to look around and say, this is the situation right now, but we need to change it. And I think they're trying to do that, and they are saying that, but they just keep falling over every time they try to do it.
I got one more for you. We talk so much about how Devin Booker, is all the losing weighing on Devin Booker, and is he going to eventually snap and want out of here or whatever. You're around this team a lot. How is the losing weighing on DeAndre Ayton, who I know is only it's 3/4 of the way through his first NBA season, but there's no way he expected to be on an 11-win team?
I think it's starting to get to him. In the Sacramento Kings game, he started being really physical on defense. And what I mean by that, when guys were running off screens around him, he was just elbowing them in the back and stuff and being overly physical. He had that offensive foul where he bowled over Harrison Barnes. And I've never seen him do that before. And it's clear that frustration is getting to him. And I think the most confusing thing for him must be, after all these wins, he has said things like, we've shown that we can compete any night. We just need to play like that consistently. And for him, trying as a young player to find himself, but also find within the team what they need to succeed to find that consistency, they're not finding it, and it must confuse him a lot, because I think he believes he's playing really well, which he is as a rookie. He's doing his part, but it's not working around him, and that must be confusing for him to go through as such a young player in the league.
Last thing before we let you go, away from the Suns league-wide, I'm never moving off Golden State winning the title. I think they win the title. I think the East is going to be interesting. But what is happening that is interesting right now, there's like 5 or 6 legitimate MVP candidates. As we sit at the break, who's your pick for MVP?
I think it's got to be Harden.
Yes.
With the month and a half that he had. I was actually leaning Embiid with the amount of dominance that he had, and Giannis, same sort of situation. I was between those two. But the month and a half Harden had, if they make the playoffs and he continues this to a certain extent and just doesn't fall off like we might expect him to, I don't think there's any other answer. Yes, it's only been a month, and if it ends now, it's only been a month and a half or whatever, but mm-hmm. It's the best stretch of play we've seen in over a decade.
Yeah.
and he was the pick last year, and that's boring. I don't care if it's boring. You know what's not boring? Scoring over 40 points a game over a month.
Yeah, that was not boring. You're exactly right. Kellen, thanks so much for the time. Appreciate it. Kellen joins us occasionally here on Bickley and Marotta. You can get his stuff all the time on arizonasports.com. He joined us in studio. Wanted to remind you to that Burns and Gamble will be broadcasting live starting at 2 p.m. from GCU to get the Lopes pumped up for their first baseball game in the newly renovated Brazel Field. Head to the events page on arizonasports.com for complete details. The Sports Kebab with Jarrett Carlin straight ahead. It's Bickley and Marotta live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Time to take a look at the Arizona Sports Poll Question. Brought to you by Sanderson Ford. The best play is at Sanderson Ford.
Today's Sanderson Ford poll question on the front page of arizonasports.com. I would let Luke vote, but I know how he would vote, so I'll do it today. What place will the Diamondbacks finish in the National League West? First, second, third, fourth, fifth. We both said third.
We both said third.
All right, I'll cast the vote for third. Fourth place is winning right now, 38%. 32% say third. Only 18% say fifth.
I guess that's good.
The Padres are still talking to Manny Machado, by the way. 4% say first.
Yeah, first is last somehow. So we need to get this same logic implemented in the NBA and possibly the NFL. So being first isn't good.
And being last is the best.
Yes. You can cast your votes today. Sanderson Ford poll question on the front page of arizonasports.com.
It's sports news skewered. The Sports Kebab.
Take it away, Jarrett.
All right, the Sports Kebab. Brought to you by Paradise Ridge Dentistry. We don't just inject Novocaine, we inject fun. Text TOOTH to 620-620 to find out more about Paradise Ridge Dentistry. Vince, you're finally here. You miss every other Sports Kebab, it feels like.
And yeah, this is weird to be here on a Friday.
I'm glad because I've peppered this with a lot of pop culture references, so just for you. But I do want to start off the Sports Kebab.
Timely ones? Or
No.
More Carson Daly talk?
I do want to start out by giving a shout-out to the absent Dan Bickley. Not because I miss him, but because shouting is literally the only way to get in contact with Dan on vacation since he left his cell phone here in Phoenix. Yes, Dan Bickley is currently at a theme park with his wife, kid, and two teenage children for a week without his cell phone in Florida. That doesn't sound like a vacation. That sounds like the plot to a Saw movie. Now, people make fun of Bick's giant hair. We've heard that all down there. But this is actually one scenario where it works to his advantage at a theme park, because it helps him ride any roller coaster where you have to be this tall to get on. Especially in that humidity. But 1 week without a cell phone? 1 week without a cell phone. Man. Although I should point out that even without his phone, somehow his response rate to my text has actually improved over the last few days.
It's because of me.
Now I'll tell you what hasn't improved. The Arizona Wildcats. Six losses in a row.
How terrible are they?
Look, now I know why Bill Walton does so many U of A games. The only way you can enjoy the Wildcats is if you've done drugs for the last 50 years. What a pathetic, paltry, putrid pack of players. They look like what would have happened if the Beacon Town Beavers never got a Teen Wolf.
So not timely.
They look like a... No. They look like Bel Air prep before Will Smith joined the team. I mean, this offense is an embarrassment.
How embarrassing is it?
They don't look like Division I players. They look more out of place than Jennifer Lopez doing a Motown tribute. And not just the offense, they also have horrible defense. I haven't seen someone defend this comically at a court at night since John Larroquette.
Oh!
How about that one? I actually think it might be savvy, though. I think their plan is to avoid an NCAA investigation by tricking the FBI into believing that they're not an NCAA team. So far, so good, guys. But seriously, I have had enough of Sean Miller, that red-faced dumpling.
That screaming sausage. That high blood pressured Fred Savage. Seriously, I would say that I'm ready for the FBI to come drag him away, but then I'd feel bad for whoever had to clean up this skid trail of sweat left behind. They haven't won a game in nearly a month. Okay? Nearly a month. Can you imagine being a fan of a team like that? It would drive you crazy. Thank goodness this is an isolated incident, an outlier team, or else I would truly go nuts if any other team I like was like that. The Phoenix Suns had to break. Losers of 15 in a row. Yes, the Suns have the worst record and the longest losing streak in the NBA. Who would have thought that my terrible prediction of the Cardinals winning 10 games this season would be more accurate for the Suns? Seriously, let's be honest, we were all pretty far off on what we thought the Suns would do this year. I mean, I've seen better predictions on The Masked Singer. You watch this show, either of you?
Yes.
Every episode...
I skim through it.
Every episode, seriously, the judges guess who it is, and they have outrageous answers. Oh, it's got to be Beyonce. Oh, it's Obama. Oh, look at that guy. It's the Pope singing. Then it turns out it's John Lovitz in a bee costume or something. I mean, but it's been a rough first part of the season. I mean, DeAndre Ayton, he's been okay, but he's getting so overshadowed by Doncic. I mean, the national media crows more about Luka than Suzanne Vega. things have gotten so bad.
How bad are they?
Some are asking for the NBA to step in. And when Adam Silver heard this, he said, you know what? I've always liked football. Yes, NBA commissioner and man slowly turning into a praying mantis. Adam Silver was approached by NFL owners to become their commissioner. Now, have you seen Adam Silver? You seen this guy?
No.
Let me describe him to you. He looks like John Malkovich's X-ray. He looks like a tongue depressor made of beef jerky. He looks like if a pinky finger was a pirate. So finally, I will say this about Silver in conclusion. I don't think he would work as an NFL commissioner. I mean, think about how big a deal the NFL draft is. Prime time, multiple days. If Silver was there announcing the picks, just think of how many awkward times there'd be where a player came on stage and accidentally tried to shake the hand of the stand-up microphone.
It's a good point.
Yes. So stay in the NBA, Adam.
Was that it?
That was it. I said, and finally, yeah, sorry, that was...
I thought that was.
Well, no, you can only hear out of one
ear.
That
was your last insult of Adam Silver, yeah. And that there was more.
No.
Okay, well done.
Thank you.
That was good.
Do you feel somewhat soothed now that you got all that U of A stuff off?
No, and you know what's crazy is that they're not good, and I know they're not good, and I know they're not going anywhere. And I always watch the games, thinking that I'm not going to get invested, and then halfway through the game, I get so angry and mad at this team. That it drives me crazy.
The U of A being bad though is so good for the quality of the sports kebab.
Because, the passion,
yes. You just your general angst and disgust with them.
Yeah.
Think about how much fun Bill Walton will have calling games when his son is the head coach next year.
The Sports Kebab every Friday with Jarrett Carlin. You can get that humor all the time on Twitter at Jarrett GC, JarrettGC. And of course, we always post it on the website as well at ArizonaSports.com, making it shareable.
Ooh.
So you can subject others. Like I mean, you can share it with others.
If you forgot to get somebody a Valentine's Day gift,
yes.
Just go ahead and download the kebab.
If you weren't able to book the services of Kenny G on Valentine's Day to play for your loved one, in the living room, send the sports kebab.
I got to say, I walked out into the lobby, so like outside of our actual like radio station area here in this building,
just blasting nothing but saxophone music. No joke.
Really?
Like the overhead music out in the hallways.
I have a feeling we'll get some saxophone music for Song of the Day.
Ooh.
Ooh, how about that for a tease?
All right.
You want to get your hands on Coyotes, ASU basketball, or Suns tickets? Just visit the rewards page at arizonasports.com and click Game Day Tickets for your chance to win. Coming up, you think the Fyre Festival was a scam? It may have already been topped. We'll tell you about that and the latest development in NBA jerseys next. It's Bickley and Marotta with Luke Lipinski today, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. That is some sexy saxy right there. Queued up halfway through to fit our own purposes. I don't even know how we got on saxophone music earlier.
It was one of the rejoiners I played or something.
Yeah,
but it was tremendous response online. Like,
yeah, I want to read
over 80 people suggestions on the best saxophone song.
I got skewered for suggesting Careless Whisper, but it's the first one I thought of. Here's some examples. This, of course, is In Excess, Never Tear Us Apart.
Yes.
Baker Street by Jerry Rafferty. That's a good one. Careless Whisper got some. Bob Seger, Turn the Page. Can't You Hear Me Knocking got a couple of votes. Shotgun by Johnny Walker and the All-Stars. Only the Good Die Young by Billy Joel.
But again, none of these are after like 1989.
It's been a while. Foreigner, Urgent.
The Night Court theme.
Doom, doom.
Doom, doom. Night Court references are you going to make in 1 hour? That's a lot of Night Court from Jared over there.
Well, a surprise for you. Now on the line, Richard Moll.
Yeah. Burns and Gamble will talk to Bull Shannon later on today. He's actually dead, isn't he?
Is he? Oh, no, I hope not.
Don't ruin Jared's day.
I think Richard might be Moll right. Is dead. The Impression Marshall That Walford, I Get by Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. Money by Pink Floyd. There's been a lot. The Night Court theme. Midnight City by M83. I actually like that song.
Oh, yeah,
that's
there
got
is
good
a saxophone
in that, too.
Yeah.
And that's relatively new.
That's like within
the last post-1989.
5 or 6 years. All their songs
Who
have
can
a bunch
it be
of weird
now?
Stuff in there.
Oh, that's a good one, too. All right. We talked at longer length than we should have about the Fyre Festival and the documentaries that came out. Have you seen either one of the documentaries?
No, which one's better?
They're both really good.
Okay.
You watch them both if you have access to both.
All right.
There might be a bigger scam out there. Jose Canseco is a shady individual. We're all agreed on this, correct?
Yeah. Unless this is a different Jose Canseco I don't know about.
I got to find a better story that has the full write-up on it. Here we go. Jose Canseco has made it known that he's hunting for Bigfoot and aliens. And you can actually join him on this hunt for Bigfoot and aliens for just $5,000.
That's it? Just think if you find Bigfoot and aliens and it only costs you $5,000.
The Las Vegas Review-Journal spoke to Canseco's manager slash girlfriend, Morgan Strelo, who said the trip was a real thing and would be limited to just 5 lucky individuals for the low, low price of $5,000.
That's pretty ambitious.
If you sign up for this excursion, you have too much money.
Well, what was the...
And you should have to forfeit it.
Who was the golfer that was supposed to tip like $50,000 and he only tipped $5,000?
Matt Kuchar.
So his caddy could blow it all on this one experience.
Oh, that's
right
a follow-up from yesterday's off-the-grid part.
Yeah.
Eric Cohen did the math on Matt Kuchar tipping his fill-in caddy after winning $1.2 million in a tournament, that would equate to in like actual numbers that we can, you know... What's the word I'm looking for? We can relate
Eric
to
Cohen's math.
Eric, what was the math findings you came up with?
So he tipped him 0.4% of his winnings. Just to make that easy, if you went out for Valentine's Day yesterday and had a about a $50 check, he would have left a 2-cent tip. So,
and then he had the gall to, I think that's a pretty good tip.
Yeah.
Matt Kuchar.
Oh, maybe he didn't have his tip calculator with him.
Speaking of people that may have too much money, if you are one of these people that purchases the NBA jersey of the future, which was unveiled today by Commissioner Adam Silver in Charlotte.
Yeah.
Have you seen these?
I'm looking right now. I'm still reading Jose Canseco's tweets.
Yeah. Steer clear from them. It was an opportunity to make
Wait,
fun.
I've got one, though. I've got to read you because I feel like this is important. Stay away from Bitcoin. It will go up 8% and then rapidly drop 33%. Jose Canseco, February 13th.
Oh, good.
So
I get all my investment tips from Jose Canseco. The NBA unveiled new jerseys today, future technology that fans could use someday, a jersey in which you can easily switch out the name and number on the back. Not by needle and thread or sewing new names on, by the push of a button. He actually demonstrated this, that you could put whatever name and number you wanted on the back of any jersey.
Yeah.
These will be available not only for NBA players, but I assume the public someday. My first question is, how would you wash such a thing?
It's a fair question.
On Twitter, there was all kinds of jokes. One says Kevin Durant can now switch teams mid-game with these new NBA jerseys. An individual by the name of Jensen Karp tweeted out, this NBA digital jersey will finally help me achieve the life goal of having a number 20 Clippers jersey for a player named Matchbox. Which got me to thinking about last night's Coyotes game.
Mm-hmm.
The St. Louis Blues have a player named Pat Maroon.
Yes.
His number is not 5.
I applaud him for that.
He passed up on the ice. He's Maroon 7.
You want to skate around with Maroon 5 on your back? That will end your career very quickly.
I guess that's a good point.
He's a genius if you think about it.
All right, real quick. Devin Booker, does he win the NBA 3-point shootout tomorrow?
I'm going to say no.
Who are you picking? Do you have a pick?
I'll take Steph Curry until proven otherwise.
That seems a pretty safe pick.
I'll go out on a limb.
I'll say this. The Suns fan base needs something good to happen.
Yes, I agree.
He's only shooting 32% from three-point range this year, but he is the defending champion.
He'd probably be my second choice behind
Steph. You watch
him
during warm-ups. He doesn't miss a lot.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me.
Go Book. Give us something to cheer about. Thanks to our guests today, Mike Farron, Kellen Olson. Luke, thanks for sitting in. It's been a lot of fun.
Fun week.
Very fun week. Back to the grind next week, huh? Burns and Gamble are up next, but first we leave you with this reminder.
Do either of you ever do that? Do you go back and listen to stuff?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I go back and listen to interviews all the time.
No.
I don't go back. I don't go back and listen to our interactions. Those are painful enough the first time.
Yeah, we just let the cat out of the bag on why the show has not improved in 5 plus. Neither one of us is willing to work hard enough.
Well, I'm glad you're back, man. Even though you are still not even close to 100%, it's good to have you.
I mean, I haven't been close to 100% in years, but...
That's true.
You laugh at everything, thankfully, which I appreciate so much.
It's funny. When Bickley's here, I don't laugh that much.
Wow.
Like all good movies, it started with a Tan Pinchot.
It's all about the base.
Josh Rosen, baby. We may not be the best team in the NFC, but we got the deepest voices, baby.
Yeah. That's what I want to hear. Rundown.
Especially on Valentine's Day. Cockamamie.
Eddie LeBaron.
Grandma Moses.
Grandma's cookies.
Whoop-de-doo. I haven't seen this much wax since I took a field trip to Madame Tussauds.
I love every one of you.
It was nice.
Okay, fine.
It's like, not electric light.
Maybe about shape or something. More than you can shake a stick at.
Like quit three. Shaking your stick, Beavis.
What a dork.
That is outstanding.
And you may say, hey, I'm a schemer.
Shot.
Let me analyze this.
Makers of Freaky Friday.
Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead.
That wasn't a Euro step. That was a Pangea step.
So do you still have his phone?
Yeah, it's at my place.
So we can just read texts that he's receiving out over the air as like a segment?
Nothing really that
boy.
Exciting so far.
Not yet.
Well, unless you like Guitar Joe. Then, boy, if we have a segment for you.
If you're a fan of parody in sports, you should really start paying attention to the Western Conference of the National Hockey League.
And if you're a fan of parody in sports, listen to the Sports Kebab, 1:30 on Fridays.
All right, this little tangent was brought to you by absolutely nobody.
There should be no consistency to it.
Perfect. You've heard our show before,
yes.
Actually.
That describes the show.
Exactly, so I wanted to fit in.
No consistency at all. it's one of the most amazing things, and not in a good way, that you will ever see.
Good night, everybody.